Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the last day of September. All things political, which you always hear on Mondays at 1 o'clock, the possible, some would say probable, government shutdown and the rollout of the Affordable Care Act will be topping our discussion and may comprise the entire discussion this Monday. We'll have two guests. Philip Klein will be joining us in just one moment, senior editorial writer for the Washington Examiner. And Zoe Carpenter will join us later in the hour, a reporter for the nation's Washington Bureau. We'll be welcoming phone calls all hour, and let's get your opinion on a possible government shutdown. What do you think about this? And there will be another debate on raising the debt ceiling just in a couple weeks. Should this be tied to funding of the president's health care plan? Is the president being intransigent and not talking to leadership in the House? Is the leadership of the House being held hostage by the Tea Party? Those are the questions. Here's our phone number for you to join us, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Philip Klein has written about both the Affordable Health Care Act and a potential government shutdown recently. We should say that the Senate is convening as we speak, and we will let you know what their action is as we carry on with our conversation. Philip, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You wrote September 21st, just a week ago, with House Republicans and Senate Democrats an ocean apart when it comes to resolving the current showdown over the budget and the health care law. It's theoretically, you said, increasingly likely that there will be a partial government shutdown October 1st. But in reality, there's still reason to believe that lawmakers will come to some sort of agreement to keep the government funded. Do you stand by that, or would you change your writing as of today?
I think certainly the odds of a government shutdown are a lot higher than when I wrote that. And basically when I wrote that, I was sort of pointing out how at every point when we've had a sort of crisis where between Republicans and Democrats over the past 2.5 years since Republicans took over the House of Representatives, there has been sort of a lot of hype and hoopla, and then both sides were really apart, and then at the end they cut some sort of deal. But this time it looks like, you know, the dynamics may be different. We're here now about 10 hours or so before the government should shut down, and the Senate is expected any moment to reject what the most recent House passed funding measure. Harry Reid has just said that he wouldn't support a one-week, stopgap funding measure, which in the past has been deployed to sort of give the parties more time to negotiate. So there's not much time for the House and Senate to come together, and it doesn't appear that they're particularly really in serious talk. So certainly the odds are much higher than when I wrote that in favor of some sort of shutdown. It may only be for, you know, a week or so, you know, a few days, but the odds are increasing that they won't have a deal by midnight.
And Philip, as the Senate is meeting, Speaker Boehner is calling together leadership and key members of the House as well. What will the House do? It's pretty much a given that the Senate's going to reject what the House gave them. So what will the House do now?
It's unclear. I mean, it appears that the House is going to pass something else, which, again, includes some sort of provision related to President Obama's health care law. It may not be as ambitious as defunding or one-year delay. It might be more narrow, such as delaying the mandate for a year or getting rid of the sort of, dealing with the whole controversial issue of the way Congress was able to get special treatment, so to speak, in terms of the health care, resolving the problems with congressional staff getting health care with the health care law, and or perhaps a medical device tax or some sort of provision of Obamacare that's been widely and broadly unpopular, and maybe attaching that to another CR and then putting that back in the hands of the Senate, which again the Senate wouldn't pass. So that it just doesn't seem like the next play is for the House to just pass a straight government funding measure that the Senate would then pass.
Although
it doesn't seem like that.
Although if Boehner chose to go that route, that would pass from what I'm hearing. Is that what you're hearing as well?
Well, the idea is that basically if you look at the pattern of what's happened in all the sort of previous compromises is that it's gotten to the point where Boehner essentially cast the, you know, basically, Senate and Republicans and Democrats sort of come together to support some sort of compromise. And then the House is able to pass something with a lot of Democratic support. So in theory, if Boehner would bring up a so-called clean CR, which is a bill to fund the government that doesn't have anything about any language about defunding or delaying Obamacare attached to it, then that may very well be able to pass the House with a lot of Democratic votes. It's just that Boehner may not be at the point where he wants to pass something with Democratic votes. He gets problems within his own caucus.
Right.
Passing these deals that his own, you know, Republicans don't support. So he's played that before, but he kind of might decide that he'll be fought on more.
Is really calling the shots for the Republican Party.
But neither one of them really has the love of the conservative base. On top of that, one of the other issues, which I don't think has gotten quite as much attention as it should, is that Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, has been sort of at the center of a lot of the compromises dating back to the debt ceiling. I mean, he was the one that came up with this idea of having this sort of committee and breaking up the debt ceiling votes into several votes, and he was sort of had played a very big role in that deal, as well as coming together. And it was basically he and Biden that did a lot of negotiations during the whole fiscal cliff crisis last December. But right now, he's facing re-election next year and the potential of a primary challenge in a state in which, you know, Rand Paul's his other, you know, the other senator. So he's kind of fearing his own re-election. So as a result, that's kind of handcuffed more than in the past to sort of jump into the fray and try to be associated with a compromise that's seen unpopular among the base.
What?
So I think there's been this big void, and Ted Cruz sort of jumped into this.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. What is it about the Affordable Care Act that has many Republicans really going to the wire on this, risking public being upset about the Republicans, because polls show that the Republicans would be blamed for shutting down the government? And Obamacare, everybody must know, is not something that the president is going to let just disappear. He fought very hard for it. They call it a signature piece of legislation from the administration. So why this huge battle over something that the Democrats in the Senate and the president would never defund?
Isn't ready. You have situations where, basically if you flash back during this whole debate, Obama had said, we're going to, the reason why we have to do this is to reduce healthcare costs, which may be, if we don't do anything, $1 out of $5 spent in a country will be on healthcare within a decade. Well, we just had a report a few weeks ago that said from the actuaries of the Center of Medicare and Medicaid Services, which said, in fact, Obamacare is going to increase healthcare costs by over $600 billion relative to if we had done nothing. And in fact, it's going to cost it's going to grow to around 20% of GDP, which is exactly what Obama at the beginning of this process warned would happen if we didn't take action. And so on top of that, we had Obama promising that people would be able to go on to an exchange, which he said was going to be like a website like Orbitz or Expedia, and buy health insurance just like you would with airline tickets. Well, we've had several of the exchanges have been delayed, and there is a big expose in the Wall Street Journal on this, and now subsequently several states have exchanged that they have a difficulty calculating the price of an insurance policy. Now, imagine if you went on Orbitz or Expedia to purchase airline tickets, and they said, sorry, we can't tell you what the price of the airline ticket. I mean, these are real problems. I mean, Obama, the health care law, it was supposed to have the system that was going to seamlessly, in real time, verify people's income so that they could accurately calculate the subsidies that people were entitled to. They had to delay that for a year. So these anti-fraud measures that the Obama administration said were necessary to ensure that subsidies were getting to the right people, those are being delayed, yet they're not delaying the subsidies. So, I mean, I can go on and on, but the idea is that there's a lot of signs that this is not going well and that it's not ready for prime time and that it was ill-conceived. And might I add, too, that a lot of these problems that we're seeing, for instance, the delays that have been announced in Colorado, Washington, D.C., and Oregon, those are all Democratic states and the District of Columbia that were very supportive of the health care law and early adopters. And the whole narrative being pushed by the White House is that somehow the reason why it's not working is because of Republican obstruction. Well, I'm sorry, Oregon didn't have to delay its exchange because of Republican obstruction in Oregon. They've been gung-ho about this law from the beginning.
Philip Klein, our guest this part of All Things Political, and we're going to welcome phone calls. He is senior editorial writer for the Washington Examiner. Obviously, what's political today and what is probably what's going to take up our whole agenda this hour is the likely government shutdown, which would take place at midnight, and also the rollout of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare tomorrow. And the two have become linked, as you well know. So what do you think? Here is our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Is it a good strategy on the part of Republicans to link the two together, the government shutdown and asking for significant changes to the Affordable Care Act, or is that going to turn out to be not very helpful to Republicans? Are they, as our guest suggested, that there's a lot of money involved in all of this as well, so that if you want financial backing from some groups, then you need to make sure that you have proper enough conservative credentials. Are you worried as well about the Obamacare rollout tomorrow? Does it have a significant explanation? Do you know what's happening with it? Will you be using it? We welcome your phone calls and we'll take them in just one moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All Things Political now. We have many phone calls coming in, so let's get to as many as we can. And Ray in Milwaukee starts us off. Hi, Ray.
Hi, I want to agree totally with what your guest has said so far. I'm way, way on the left. I mean, I'm extremely to the left. What troubles me about this act, I have a third name for the act. It's called the Insurance Company Handout Act. I need to remind people, insurance companies provide zero health care. Their job is to limit the amount of money from the population that goes into actual health care. They want to use that money for themselves, for their agents, for their companies, to build like 40-story-high skyscrapers here on Milwaukee's lakefront. But remember this, people on the left, or so-called Democrats, I don't really call myself a Democrat, who were so angry at what Governor Walker did here in Wisconsin by pushing through Act 10 without any talk or anything coming out of the Democratic side. There were no votes on the Democratic side, and it outraged people here. Well, where did he get that idea? It was Obama and Obamacare pushed through with zero Republicans. I don't think a big act like this has ever happened in this country before. And as far as government shutting down, I consider it's already shut itself down since we started printing $85 billion of monopoly money every month from the so-called Federal Reserve.
Philip.
You know, a lot of different things, points there. I mean, I do agree that, you know, it is sort of, you know, you had asked sort of about the level of opposition among Republicans, but I also think that, and something that the caller touched on, is that it's really unprecedented to pass something this major with this little support. And if you look at past major reforms like Social Security and Medicare, even though they were controversial in some quarters, I mean, they passed by overwhelming bipartisan votes in the House and Senate, and they were popular broadly. They polled much better than Obamacare. And now we're basically about to implement the law that's been passed for 3.5 years, and Obama's been making the public case for it for 4.5 years, and yet a majority of Americans still oppose the law.
Isn't there a case to be made, though, Philip, that the law hasn't been enforced yet? Let's see what happens.
But the issue is, though, that, yeah, you could argue that, but the problem is that we already have some indication of what's already happening. I mean, we have issues of employers firing employees to try to get rid of, part-time workers, health care, to fire, cut down worker hours so that they aren't eligible for the employer mandate. I mean, there are already a lot of real-world consequences to the law. And Obama has already delayed, when he didn't have the legal authority to do so, he delayed the employer mandate. So why is it that Obama gets to arbitrarily rewrite the law, whereas anyone else sort of criticizes it or says that it's not going to work, and they're, you know, it's crazy, and they're obstructionists. I mean, Obama's the obstructionist by saying, you know, why don't we just let the employer mandate work?
Thanks, Ray, for the call. Let's go to Bev in Dallas. Hi.
Hi. I have a suggestion to the Republican Party, if I may. I would suggest that they disassociate themselves from this Tea Party and tell the Tea Party to form their own political party. That way we could resolve these problems more quickly based on the amount of votes that are turned in by the representatives. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Bev, for the call. Philip.
I think that the issue with the Tea Party is that really to understand the genesis of it, you have to go back during the Bush era. And during the Bush era, Bush was a big government Republican. He expanded government spending by about 60% when he was in office. He passed the Medicare prescription drug plan. He passed the massive expansion of the federal role in education with No Child Left Behind. And conservatives often gave him a free pass during that period. And so later in his presidency, there was sort of a backlash against this that culminated with the Wall Street bailout as he was about to leave office. And then as the Tea Party movement came of age during, and really exploded during Obama's term, there was this feeling that the enemy wasn't just the Democrats, but it was actually Republicans who say one thing but aren't actually true to limited a government ideology. So there are a lot of people that want limited government, and I, as a supporter of limited government, I think that aspect and that development is good, because what we've seen over time is that we've, you know, there are always special interests urging for more government intervention and that make it difficult to cut government. You know, the Wall Street, the big banks got their bailout. Not the rest of the you know, American people, but the Wall Street banks had to get bailed out by taxpayers that sort of did the right thing and paid their, you know, taxes and you know, took out mortgages on houses they couldn't afford. They weren't pumping money into this exploding mortgage market, but, you know, the well-connected Wall Street people get bailed out. So there was this very sense of unfairness, and so there was a move to get more ideologically pure people. And one of the positive developments of the Tea Party is that you have pressure coming from the opposite side when politicians don't deliver on their you know, small government pledges. But I think that what happened, and I wrote about this just recently, is that I think that whereas a lot of conservatives were too forgiving during the Bush era, I think they're now too unforgiving of Republicans, and they've raised their expectations to insane levels where they think that if House Republicans who don't control, who only control half of the legislative branch and don't have the presidency, that somehow merely by digging in and refusing to cave, that they can somehow get whatever they want. I mean, if that were the case, why have a presidential election? Why have Senate elections? I mean, if you could just get whatever you want just by digging in your heels in the House, it, you know, what's the point? I mean, so I just think that they're getting the tactics wrong in the sort of fervor, and that given the pent-up frustration they've had for decades with Republicans making all sorts of promises about wanting to shrink government and not really doing anything in office or actually actively expanding government, that's what's sort of fueling a lot of this stuff. But I think that it would be better if they take a step back and say, well, what's the best way we can sort of tactically approach this? What sort of a more reasonable thing that we can actually achieve when Republicans don't control all of government?
Philip, thank you ever so much for being with us. Philip Klein, senior editorial writer for the Washington Examiner, our first guest on All Things Political. We continue now with Zoe Carpenter, reporter in the nation's Washington Bureau. The focus of our conversation this hour is the potential, perhaps likely, government shutdown at midnight tonight and the rollout of the Affordable Care Act, which is tomorrow. And as you know, the two have been linked. Zoe, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I know you've written extensively, and I want to get to that interesting article that you wrote about healthcare reform. But first, your thoughts on a shutdown. Does it look likely tonight?
It does look likely. The Senate just voted to strip out the provisions defunding Obamacare or delaying Obamacare from the House version, and it's now been sent back to the House. There is a small possibility that the House could pass a short-term spending measure. But it depends on whether Boehner can rally enough votes for Republicans to join Democrats to pass that CR.
Mm-hmm. Senate vote was 54 to 46, I understand. Is that about what you thought it would be?
That's about consistent. That does indicate that there were lots of Republicans who support the House version.
Right. You have written about the Affordable Care Act, and this is a really interesting story that this whole battle is making a lot of money for the conservatives who started it all. What kind of money? Where is it coming from?
So the money is coming from small donors, sort of the rank-and-file conservative base, people who have always been opposed to Obamacare and who voted for candidates who promised to stand against the health care law. And now they would like to see that stance be made into policy. But, you know, it's now a law. The Affordable Care Act is a law. It's not a policy proposal. So, but back to the money, we're seeing lots of small donations come in, and that's really not representative, I think, of the will of voters, clearly, given the current makeup of the Hill and who's in the White House.
Mm-hmm. And yet there is this effort, and you outline it, there are groups that are organizing rallies at college campuses all over the country, urging young people to not sign up for this care, that they really don't need it. The defund Obamacare movement is fairly large, would you say? Extensive?
I would say it's fairly large among certain groups. It's not large nationwide. It's strong in certain pockets. And there is money coming from donors like the Koch brothers. And so especially the push to discourage young people from signing up, that is being led by a lot of really heavy-hitting donors and conservative PACs, political action committees.
There also must be money that is tied to re-election, or I'm still trying to get a handle. When you said a lot of Republicans voted along with House Republicans, and yet we heard from many House Republican leaders, you even quote in your article Speaker Boehner asking last March, do you want to risk the full faith and credit of the U.S. government over Obamacare? That's a very tough argument to make. Well, all of a sudden, it got all this support. I'm still having a hard time understanding that.
It is really puzzling. When I went to one of these defund Obamacare rallies at the end of August, it seemed very unlikely, and that was just a month ago. I think really the leadership caved to this hard right party, and I think it's important when we think about what's happening now with the threat of government shutdown. It's not government gridlock. This is not a partisan battle. This is really an internal struggle within the Republican Party, where a relatively young upstart group is trying to wrestle control of the party away from the leadership, which is, I hesitate to use the phrase more moderate, because the leadership is not what I would consider moderate, but this is a really, it's a manifestation of an internal struggle. It's not about disagreements between Democrats and Republicans, although those are also there.
And the upstart group is led by Senator Cruz?
Senator Cruz and Mike Lee, that's correct. And that's another interesting dynamic, as we see these very vocal Republican senators leading the charge. But they don't actually have much power within the Senate, because the Senate is controlled by the Democrats. So then they push all of these decisions back to the House and demand that the House stand up for these principles, such as defunding Obamacare. But when the vote comes back to the Senate, it can't go anywhere.
You write about going to this ballroom of a DoubleTree hotel outside Wilmington, Delaware. Senator Cruz's father rallying a few hundred conservatives, saying, and I'm not sure what this means either, so tell me in the context of how where it was being said what it means, his father saying, they can take our lives, they can take our fortunes, but they cannot take our honor. No one can take our honor. What does that mean?
Well, Senator Cruz's father is a pastor, and he was giving a rallying cry, and I think the right's message about Obamacare is that this is a fundamental intrusion in the American way of life and in American liberty, and so this sort of grand rhetoric is what's been used to describe something that's really a very concrete set of policies that's designed to give millions of people access to health care.
Before we go to phone calls, and we have many of them, our last guest was talking about what he thought was a disaster that's already happened and it'll only get worse, and that's when the Affordable Care Act rolls out tomorrow. He said there are some states, mentioning Oregon, D.C., that don't have systems in place so you can sign up. There are fraud questions here, that the whole thing is costing way much more money when it was supposed to cost less, that it's just going to be terrible. Are there problems with the Affordable Care Act?
There are certainly difficulties to its enrollment and to the rollout. And I think it's difficult to separate the internal flaws of the law and the fact that it is not single payer and it's not a public option. So separating those criticisms from the flaws that we're seeing now, many of which are because of deliberate sabotage from states that are controlled by Republican legislatures and from Republicans in Congress. So the things like so many states refusing to set up insurance exchanges, that's put much more responsibility onto the federal government to set up those exchanges, and that's taken a lot more manpower and time than perhaps the federal government anticipated. There's been a tax on navigators, which are people that are supposed to be helping walk constituents through the law, and they've been hampered with unnecessary regulations. The refusal to expand Medicaid to give access to insurance to the poor. These sorts of deliberate sabotage attempts are really what's causing the flaws in the law, and so it's very disingenuous to say that the problems we're seeing are the flaws of the law itself.
Troy is our first caller for you in Platteville. Hi.
Hi. I can only speak from a personal standpoint on the whole thing. Tying the two subjects together as far as, you know, does the government want to fund itself, and I hate calling here because it's just...
I can't hear you very well, Troy.
But I can see, personally, the Affordable Health Care Act, if it doesn't happen for me, I will become uninsured. Right now, I had to wait a year to go on Medicaid. I had cancer. It damaged my body. I cannot work. It cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars out of pocket. My personal insurance went from $600 a month to $2,000 a month, and I had to give it up, which meant I had to wait a year as an uninsured person to get on a waiting list for Medicaid, which is 140,000 people in the state waiting for benefits. I found HRSP, federal thing, $400 a month. Yay, I'm still in great hardship. That's being defunded because of the Affordable Health Care Act. Whether they delay it a year or not, it's still going to be defunded. So on January 1st, if the Affordable Health Care Act doesn't happen, I'm again uninsured. I worked 40 years in the workforce. I paid my taxes. I've gone bankrupt taking care of my medical care costs. And it seems like the Republicans want you to think that no one benefits. I personally will benefit a great deal, and I know there are many, many other people in the same situation. And I don't understand.
All right. Your phone is cutting out, but Troy, we got your message. Thanks very much. And I hope your health path is filled with better health in the future. There obviously are going to be many people who are facing the difficulties that Troy is and will be helped by this. Right, Zoe?
That's correct. And it really is appalling that in a country as rich as ours, we have millions of people who can't afford access to care. And it really shouldn't be a question of how much money you make, because you can work very hard and still not make very much money in this country. And the Affordable Care Act will help millions of people. And even if it's not perfect, the focus should be on working to improve the law. It is the law now. And if there are things that should be tweaked about it, let's move forward with that rather than threaten to shut down the government over it.
Thanks, Troy. Willem in Colfax. Hi.
Hi. I guess what I find troubling is I'm having a hard time with the consistency of the Tea Party's ideology about government when they don't seem to be opposed to government subsidies for big coal or for logging in the federal lands, or they don't seem to be outraged by the Citizens United ruling, or to be outraged by the fact that corporations have the same rights as citizens. I don't remember that anywhere in the Constitution. And so it seems very inconsistent. And your next program about the happiest countries in the world, I can guarantee you that the top ones all have, they all have universal health care. And I don't really understand the... And a lot of the people that are opposed to this, the hottest Tea Party, are members of... They're senior citizens. They're getting Medicare and Medicaid. Those are federal programs. I've actually seen people with signs, "Get the government off my health care," and they're senior citizens. That's who's providing their health care, is the taxpayer. So, there's a lot of misinformation, and people like the Koch brothers who spend a lot of money disinforming, because the government works to the advantage of corporations, all the benefits, all the tax advantages. And where's the Tea Party's outrage against that?
Thank you very much, Willem, for the call. Zoe?
I think that is a central inconsistency, yes. And there's not much that's rational about the Obamacare fight, the standoff right now, and I think that your caller put it quite well.
Well, there is something to be said. We don't exactly know all the nuances of this because it's not in existence yet, right?
Right. Well, and the way that the law is written, it is a boon to insurance companies. It's a pretty business-friendly law. So, even if you were going to attack it from that perspective, you wouldn't have much ground to stand on.
Chris in Hixton, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I think the fight is a decent, honorable one because Obamacare is not going to work, as evidenced by the Obama administration using the offices of management and budget to give congressmen and staffers an automatic 75% subsidy for their health insurance rather than having them go through their exchanges. And these are people that are making upwards of $150,000, and they're complaining that getting health care through the exchanges is going to be too expensive. If those people are going to actually say that it's too expensive and too burdensome, what's the average citizen going to say?
Zoe.
That's not a reason to threaten a government shutdown. There's no need for hostage taking. If there are concerns about the law like that, which those accusations about Congress's health plans have been mostly unsubstantiated, but it's even if they were substantiated, it's not a reason to risk the economy, especially by threatening the debt ceiling hostage standoff.
Thanks for the call, Chris. We'll take more in just one moment. It's All Things Political for this last day in September, and there's a lot going on today with a potential government shutdown. The Senate, during the hour that we've been on, voted 54 to 46 to remove the most contentious elements of a budget bill favored by Republicans. So they sent that back to the House. The House leadership is meeting to figure out what they're going to do next to keep the government running. And so they'll send something back to the Senate, and so it goes. But a lot of people are saying now it looks like the government will be shut down. Also, tomorrow, Affordable Care Act really gets rolled out, so we're talking about that as well. And our guest this half hour is Zoe Carpenter, reporter in the nation's Washington Bureau. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John in Madison is our next caller for you, Zoe. Hi, John.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you. Sorry about that. I had you on speakerphone.
Oh, okay.
I'm a small business owner here in Madison, Wisconsin. And as far as tying this whole argument together as they're doing, it just seems to me as if it's just an act of desperate men reaching for anything to throw a wrench in the works, so to speak. As a small business owner, I can comment that I have carried health care for my employees for almost 14 years at great expense to the company. But what I've gotten in return are very dedicated and loyal employees, and those that not just are healthy, but feel vested. And what I get in return from them is excellent production and high profits. I mean, it goes hand in hand. And that the gentleman making these arguments against health care, they just don't get it. They're missing the boat.
John, what do you say to those, and we had one of those callers earlier, that your expenses for health care are going to go way up, and a lot of small businesses have had to lay people off?
Well, I think that the numbers are getting ginned up. I think there's so much misinformation, and there's so much spin by very smart, clever people, that the truth is not going to be known unless we just roll up our sleeves, get into it. It's the law. Let's make it happen.
Thanks.
And that's my opinion.
All right, John. Thank you very much for the call. It is true, and this has been true in this country for as long as we've been debating health care. Holy Toledo, is this a difficult one for us to deal with in this country? We've been fighting about it, really, for a long time, Zoe.
We have been. This has been something that I guess the last 50 years have been dominated by, I think. And it really is a historic moment to think about the law rolling out tomorrow, even though it will be a long and drawn-out process. I think that we shouldn't expect to see millions of people signing up tomorrow, certainly. But I think the last caller just made a really good point, which is that these numbers have really been ginned up, and it's difficult to exactly predict what the costs will be, and we'll just have to let the process pay out. And a lot of the costs will depend on how effectively the law can be implemented, and that would
right.
require cooperation from the states.
Thanks, John. Bonnie and Vernon, hi.
Hi. One thing I want to point out is that insurance, medical insurance, just like automobile insurance, it's a social code for spreading the risks of the few among the many, and that as while some young people who feel healthy feel that they shouldn't have to contribute, careful drivers contribute to automobile insurance all the time, just because there is that odd slim chance that they might need it someday. And as your previous caller pointed out, the fellow, a lot of small business people are not against this because it's actually going to help them out with their rates. And as more and more people sign up for medical insurance, the rates should come down because as the costs are spread out over more people, premiums should naturally come down, and premiums are regulated by states. So, and also your guest that had been on saying that everybody in America, all the citizens were against Obamacare, I don't know where he gets the figures, because if that were true, we wouldn't have reelected Mr. Obama.
Thanks, Bonnie, very much for the call. Let's talk about young people for a moment, because I know when you wrote your article, that group was targeted by those who have been very opposed to the Affordable Care Act. And it seems as though, or maybe I'm overstating the case, that young people really do need to sign up for this in order for this program to work. Do you think?
That's correct. We need millions of young people to sign up. And polling indicates that young people do want insurance. I think if you look at who is leading the charge against Obamacare, it's mostly old men. I think especially young women are really looking forward to having some of the new protections that are put in place under the law. It's no longer an added expense just to be a woman. And young people want the freedom to be able to start their own business or to take a public interest job that may not have great benefits. And the Affordable Care Act gives them a way to have insurance without being tied to a specific job in a traditional industry. So I think that that's important to remember when we think about those arguments saying that young people don't want to subsidize the old or the unwell. I think that a lot of young Americans really do see that social collective argument for it.
And what do you see the administration doing to sell this program so that it will work? Do you think that they have done a good job here?
I think they have certainly launched an aggressive effort. There's been public service advertisements. They've tried to do partnerships with other organizations. But again, some of those efforts have been frustrated by conservative scare tactics. For example, trying to partner with the NFL. And that was the subject of serious controversy, and the NFL pulled out of that partnership. So it's been another case where it's been made more difficult by obstructionism.
Oh, it's been difficult, hasn't it? This one's been difficult. Joan in Eau Claire, hi.
Hi. I was able to hear Ted Cruz on Rush Limbaugh's radio show via the MSNBC network a few days ago. Both Cruz and Limbaugh agreed that the Republicans' problem with the Affordable Care Act is this. After implementation of the Affordable Care Act, those who benefit from this health care, which Limbaugh and Cruz both referred to as sugary sweet coverage, that those benefitees will grow so accustomed to good health care that it will be very hard for the Republicans to take this health care coverage away from them. This is how the hard right really feels, and they actually said this over the radio waves.
Zoe.
I believe that. I've heard that argument also. And so while the conservatives say that the law is a train wreck and that that's why we have to dismantle it, really I believe that they're afraid that it's going to be very successful and that, this opposition to Obamacare has formed the heart of conservative ideology for the past several years, since the law was passed, even before it was passed. And so once that law, if the law is successful, what do they have left to stand on? I think it's an incredible dilemma for the party, for sure.
So let's do a couple scenarios, because we are facing an imminent government shutdown. Should the Republicans refashion this bill and it doesn't, the Senate still sends it back, or we do have a shutdown that happens at midnight tonight, then what happens, Zoe?
If we have a shutdown at midnight tonight, federal workers will come to work tomorrow, and then many of them will be furloughed after a few hours. The projections are that about 800,000 federal workers would be furloughed until we can have a budget resolution or a continuing resolution passed. Essential employees will continue to work. So service members serving overseas will continue to work. They may not be paid on time. That's a question. Congress will be paid. That's the irony. Congress will be paid
right
on time. But it's unclear how long it would last. The last shutdown was the longest. It lasted 21 days in 95-96.
And if you were taking your school group to Washington, D.C., and you were going to go to the museum of all the museums there on the Mall, they wouldn't be open, would they?
Right. The Smithsonian's would close. National parks would close. The workers on the space station would continue to go to work, obviously. NASA would mostly furlough its employees otherwise. So we'd see effects across all federal agencies. And I think it's important to remember that even if the House does pass a clean continuing resolution that just maintains the current budget levels, that shouldn't necessarily be seen as a victory, and certainly not for the long term, because those maintain the sequester cuts. And we really do have serious economic issues related to inequality and unemployment that we need to tackle with a budget bill. And so there's much deeper work to be done.
Mm. Tim from Ladysmith, we have about 35 seconds, sir. Hi.
Hey, I guess I'm 54 years old. I guess I'm one of those old men that are opposed to this bill that she refers to. There's so much wrong about this bill. Number one, it's government-mandated abortion, so I think that's one of the things your guest probably likes as far as she thinks it's helpful to women. This is another bureaucratic nightmare that we don't know until probably 10, 20 years. And once people are addicted to it, once you put people on the government payroll, they never get off. And I think that's exactly what this administration wants. This is not about health care. This is about government intrusion and government takeover of more stuff. And it's terrible.
Zoe.
Well, there is no such thing as a government-mandated abortion, and I would wonder if your caller is prepared to not accept Social Security or Medicare when he's older.
We'll have to have him answer that quietly, and we thank you very much, Zoe, for being with us.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to have you with us. Zoe Carpenter, she's a reporter in the nation's Washington Bureau. Philip Klein, senior editorial writer for the Washington Examiner, our guest the first part of the program. A reminder that former Labor Secretary Robert Reich will be with us tomorrow during this hour, and we'll ask him to respond to whatever happens today. I'm sure he'll have something to say. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and KP Whaley for producing this hour. Thanks for your many calls for this All Things Political. Stay tuned. We're going to talk about happiness all over the world, hour two.